Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are 116 shopping days left until Christmas, and you know what that means. That means it's time for Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies and TV shows all year round. My name is Joseph Wade. I will be your host for this evening and every evening, as it turns out. My co-hosts tonight are here with me, Jonathan Five, the human robot.
Hey, what's up?
Back from sick leave. How you feeling? How you holding up?
I like the leave part, but not the sick part.
Oh yeah, I know how all about that. So we're glad you're back, and we're glad you're ready to rock and roll with us. Mr. Bradford though is here as well. Brad,
I should have wished for a sweater.
Would that we all wished for a sweater.
How's it going?
I'm doing well, doing just fine and dandy on this lovely late August evening of ours. Where I, by hook or by crook, I wanted to get a second episode out this month, and Lord willing and the creek don't rise, this is actually going to happen. So thank the Lord for small favors. But tonight, folks, on the show, we're done with all of our ridiculous action movies that have very little to do with Christmas, and we're getting back to the meat of the matter, which is ridiculous Christmas slop that nobody but us remembers. As in tonight's feature film, which we're doing kind of for special reasons, because there's a new George Miller film in theaters right now, 3,000 Years of Longing, which I saw this weekend, and I apparently was one of only two people in the entire country who saw it this weekend, which is a shame. But in honor of that, we're going way back to the catalog and discussing a George Miller film from 1990. Called A Mom for Christmas.
I thought we were doing this because Olivia Newton-John passed recently.
There's that too.
But
I feel like we've been going to that well a lot lately, and I wanted to not do that again.
Does the Genie relationship movie have a J.O. crystal in it?
I mean, what is a genie if not a gigantic humanoid J.O. crystal?
Just a golem built out of J.O. crystals.
Is that what Kazam was about?
I mean, what is a boombox if not a giant J.O. crystal? But no, I'm not making this up. A Mom for Christmas from 1990 was directed by George Miller. It just so happens it's not the same George Miller as the one everyone's thinking of. Not the Mad Max, Babe 2, Pig in the City, George Miller. But
this movie still is somehow Australian as fuck, though.
Oh, yeah, because Olivia Newton-John is here, and she's ready to party in this one. I also just want to note real quick, it is extremely weird to me that the George Miller who made Babe and Happy Feet is not the same George Miller that made Andre and Zeus and Roxanne, and yet both of them made, like, multiple talking animal movies. I take that back. Zeus and Roxanne and Andre were not talking animals, but still.
Animal movies. Joe, where would you put Homeward Bound? Is Homeward Bound a talking animal movie or not?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Because they don't talk, but they telepathically communicate, I guess?
They talk in the sense that the narrators are giving voice to the things that the animals are having to experience.
They are dubbed over, I guess you would say.
They're dubbed
over.
They're
like barking and mewing, but then we have humanoid voice actors giving life to their
right. Like the musings. Like the dog's mouth isn't moving and Michael J. Fox's voice is coming out.
Thank goodness.
It's like the dog is just thinking in Michael J. Fox's voice.
Yes.
As one does. But we're not here to talk about any of that mess. Thank the Lord there are no talking animals in this feature film tonight, A Mom for Christmas from 1990, because that would have been like one step too far, I think. for the purposes of like this podcast, for us as people, just psychically where we are right now, I don't think we could handle that.
So no Dog Days of Summer is what you're trying to say.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Officially canceled for this year.
Dog Days of Summer is canceled. I'm sorry for both of you that were looking forward to it. But also I'm glad because like there were just straight up like no options for us. We've exhausted all the possible options. And boy, if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know about this show.
Yeesh. We could always pivot to doing movies that feature magical crystals as one of their core conceits. That's my new pitch. Welcome to the Crystal Castle, everybody.
I mean, if this podcast was going to pivot to any other topic, it's there it is. I mean,
so we're going to talk about meth?
Well, it is a sort of magic crystal if you think about it in a certain regard. So, yes, films about methamphetamine are certainly not off the table at the Crystal Castle.
Oh, gosh. Well,
so here's something I realized over the weekend.
Okay.
The guy that wrote Save the Cat, Blake Snyder, only has two movie credits, like writing credits. Stop on Our Own Will Shoot and Blank Check.
Okay. So right. What you're saying is Blake Snyder is responsible for the Blank Check podcast.
What I'm saying is that's kind of like getting like flight lessons from John McCain.
God.
It's like, your track record is not that good, dude. Who the fuck put you in charge of telling people how to do this?
I don't know what to tell you about that, man.
But anyway, the reason I bring that up is because so much of this movie, this might predate Save the Cat. I don't give a fucking shit. But so much of this movie was just, why is there a conflict? Oh, because it's a movie.
Oh, because yeah.
Otherwise, there wouldn't be a movie, I suppose.
Not even that. It's just because, like, well, the script has to do something.
Well, she just got more than she bargained for. Having a mom. As all of us mom havers know, it's not always a field of roses. No. Sometimes your mom will out you to your secret crush in front of and invite you to the burned out husk of a room in your house to sit there awkwardly. It happens.
Sometimes your mom will get you arrested for taking a joyride with a strange man at a department store.
Whomst among us.
Yeah.
Sometimes your mom will marvel at her human skin and hair, and then make you a cup of noodle soup for breakfast.
Which is a totally acceptable drink to have for breakfast, because it's got all your daily nutrients and all the protein that you need to get your day going.
I mean, honestly, probably would make a pretty good breakfast food.
Yeah.
Just like pizza.
Soup right now.
Yeah. Like breakfast soup. Let's get that going. I mean, breakfast soup, that's basically just grits, right?
I mean... why don't people do more soup for breakfast? That's an excellent question.
Yeah. Welcome to Santa's Kitchen, where we are now discussing food possibilities that will change the world.
Soup for breakfast. Consider it.
Think about it.
Did you see the post that one fucking freak made on Twitter where he was talking about his like go-to lunch was a can of tuna with relish, spicy mustard, and then a bunch of fiber one, then you just mix it all up and eat it as fast as you can?
No.
Oh, so my dad's on Twitter right now? That sounds like something my dad would eat for lunch.
The guy was just like, oh, it's efficient, it only costs like $2. And all you need to know about this guy is he's a reporter in Washington, D.C., so it's like, oh, you're a double ghoul. That explains it.
Goodness gracious.
And now that we have gone so far afield from where we originally started and where we wanted to be tonight,
let's not get ahead of ourselves with wanted to be. No,
all I'm trying to say is that, you know, when you're in a situation like this, there's really only one thing to do.
Just can check?
Crack it open.
Can check.
Mm. Tonight, ladies and gents, 'tis the season. I've got the first of the Shiner Oktoberfests here with me tonight.
Ooh, yes. I actually have some of that in my fridge, too.
It's Oktoberfest season. I love it.
It's been so long since I've gotten any Oktoberfest or pumpkin beer. I don't know. I'm feeling it this year.
Mm-hmm.
it's time to bring it back. It may be because I was trying to take it easy over the summer, and now I want something really dark and heavy. It's time.
Yeah.
Bring it on. I'm ready.
I think this year my decision has been to like go light on the pumpkin beers and just kind of stick to the Oktoberfests. Because something about just that pumpkin flavor, I may already be done with it.
I am still over. I've gone out to great lengths to describe how over I am of pumpkin beers on this podcast, and I still remain over pumpkin beers. But I'll mess with an Oktoberfest. Mm-hmm. I'll mess with a Marzen.
Yeah, a good Shiner Box Oktoberfest Marzen style beer, thing of beauty.
Sean?
I have the back half of a Coke Zero Dream World.
How's that?
Ooh.
I have to appreciate the hustle of Coke basically just throwing out whatever their experimental lab has cooked up in the last month between, what was it, Starlight and Dream World.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wish they had the cinnamon one for more than like three bottles. That was actually pretty good.
So how's Dream World?
It kind of takes the Starlight one. It's just like they just dumped a little extra like allspice in there or whatever.
You one of you described it as if Cheerwine and Coke had a baby.
Yeah, I tried not the Coke Zero brand, but like the OG Coke Dream World, and it did taste like somebody dropped a Cheerwine into a Coca-Cola.
Okay, and how I was about to get Starlight on a whim. I'm not a big cola person. Was about to buy Starlight on a whim before a beach trip, but I read that it tasted like marshmallows, and that put me off of it.
I don't blame you.
Starlight.
There's one called Marshmallow, but it doesn't taste like marshmallow.
Well, that's with the musical artist, Dr. Fortnite or whatever. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But John, tell us a little bit more about Dream World.
I don't want to say I don't like it, but it's also just it is, you know. It's not as bad as like Holiday Spice Pepsi and that kind of shit, which I absolutely loathe those. That just seems like it gets made as a joke. Yeah, I can't quite place what they're trying to go for with the flavor on it, but it's within like buy on a lark territory, I think.
I think that's what they're going for. And then they're going to keep throwing these out for the foreseeable future, right? And everybody's going to buy at least one to try it. And then finally they're going to hit on one that, like, people actually like. And then that's going to be a new Coke product, right? That's their end game with all of this, correct?
Let's see what they say the flavor actually is.
I mean, that's what Mountain Dew's been doing. They've just been putting whatever the fuck out into store shelves. And it's all here forever. You know, there's like like 35 different Mountain Dews, and like they're not, none of them are going away.
Yeah, and like half of them are store exclusive to a store you've never heard of,
and not just store exclusive, but like restaurant exclusive too, like
exclusive to Blimpies.
Yeah. come get the Pita Delight brand Mountain Dew flavor. It tastes like hummus.
Ugh.
No, Kentucky Fried Chicken has like a peach and honey flavored Mountain Dew that's actually really good.
Yeah, and Bojangles has one as well. And keeping with the region, Food Lion apparently had like the blue one is apparently exclusive Food Lion.
Oh, dang,
weird.
Bradford, I'm sorry. What are you working with tonight?
I'm back at it. I've got a Bell's Double Two Hearted, 11%. By volume, it's already treating me very right after so long away. It's a warm embrace. It's a thing. It's very strong. It's very, very, very strong, as you can probably already tell.
Oh, delightful. Yeah, I can tell. I can tell Brad's going to have fun tonight.
All right.
All right, folks. Well, that's us desperately trying not to talk about tonight's feature film, A Mom for Christmas. But now we have to talk about tonight's feature film, A Mom for Christmas. And the first thing I will say is that this was definitely made for television for like the Disney the Magical World of Disney, like, weekly TV film blog.
Yeah, you could feel it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It had serious made-for-Disney energy to it, and I was almost certain that they filmed it on, like, the Disney World backlot in Florida.
Buena Vista.
Yeah. Definitely has that kind of steez to it. To get us into the plot a little bit, I want to ask Johnny Five if he would like to explain the plot in 60 seconds or less.
All right.
So, yeah, I'll put up some money tonight, and it's going to go to a worthy SPCA in our area. So, J-Man, are you ready to do this?
Yeah.
All right, are we ready?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1, go.
There's a department store. A witch works there. Don't worry about it. She makes the mannequins come alive. Don't worry about it. There's a girl who doesn't have a mom. She wishes for a mom for Christmas. The mannequin comes alive. There's some Amelia Bedelia bullshit that gets dropped after about 20 minutes. And then the mannequin falls in love with the dad and happily ever after the end.
That's a solid 20 seconds. So congratulations, Triad SPCA. You're getting $40 from us this week. Yay! Jonathan did very good, though. He did very good at, and I will say he hit most of the relevant plot beats, and also a very specific plot beat that I know Brad wants to get into right now. Because, hey, Brad.
Yeah.
Why does the main character want a mom for Christmas?
Because her mom is dead. It's a dead mom alert. How we need to really dig back and find out. There's a good amount of films and specials that we have watched on this show. Oh God, this is hitting me hard. that feature a dead mom, you know? It seems almost ubiquitous in Christmas media. What is it? Why?
You can go to our website, ChristmasCreeps.com, where you can see the giant tag cloud of all the tags that we've put on these episodes. And Dead Mom is definitely one of the larger ones. There are dozens of films that we've covered that do this.
I mean, sometimes you get lost going to therapy and end up, in a screenwriter's office and you're the screenwriter.
Yeah, it happens.
I mean, if I had a nickel for every time that happened, I'd have, like, 35 cents.
That's for you can get yourself a pack of gum.
That's economy.
It's maybe a weird Jungian thing. Christmas equals dead mom. Who knows? I don't know.
I understand that Christmas is kind of, I mean, it's geared around the family. I get that. It makes perfect sense to me. But then for a screenwriter to say, what if we removed a family member from that equation and just like let the drama spiral out from there? It almost seems too easy.
It's kind of like a lazy shortcut to maudlin land, you know?
No. Then you kind of respect the one Christmas Shoes movie that went for a dead kid instead.
I mean, it's kind of like shooting fish in a barrel, only in this case it's people. What was I saying? I don't know.
Something about shooting moms in a morgue? Like, for the first 30 seconds of this damn movie, before the lyrics kick in the theme song, I thought, oh, this is going to be like a mall, like, slasher movie. Like, it has the whole setup of, like, a weird, creepy 80s, like...
Mall. Oh,
yeah, like, it feels like fucking Terminator, just about.
Almost, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And then the lyrics kick in, I'm like, good lord.
Yeah. There's some really interesting shots in this movie that indeed are out of a thriller or a horror movie, especially with like all the neon in the mall.
Yeah, it's like very expressive, like mood lighting. It's bizarre.
Like somebody in this who worked on this film understands that mannequins are creepy.
Oh, like, yeah,
for sure. Right.
No, the replacement mannequins with all the chains on them
and with the no ominous explanation. Music. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah,
I want the movie to be about them. not about a mom for Christmas.
Yeah, like
make it about the creepy mannequins.
They accidentally like back into a much more interesting plot and they just don't. That's like the ticking clock. It's not so much like this is the threat. It's more. Well, I guess no, that is the threat. Like this is what's going to happen to the mom after Christmas.
She's going to get thrown in the dumpster like the Santa, or into the garbage truck like the Santa at the very beginning of this film.
Yes, that's the most distressing. The most distressing image I've seen from this film is like a mall Santa mannequin just getting thrown into a trash compactor, and the door closing on him very slowly. And it's
is there any more apt summary of our podcast than this 10 seconds of this film?
If you want,
imagine like an elf shoe with a curly toe and a bell, and you have it stompy on a human face forever.
Damn it, Chuck, beat me to it. Thanks a lot, George Orwell. So, the idea here is that the girl, you know, wants a mom for Christmas because her mom died when she was very little. And all of the kids in her life just make absolute fun of her for being by herself, for being alone, and that makes her worthy of derision.
And they all hang out in the department store, the anchor department store of a mall, for some reason.
Yeah, because that's where all the kids want to hang out, is JCPenney's.
Must be a really small town.
Yeah.
Her dad is in the business of 80s business. Like, she's hanging out at fucking Dillard's or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Not JCPenney.
I mean, realistically,
I was surprised when he showed up, though. It's like, oh, her dad's not poor. Like, everything was coded as, like, you know, like, all of the kids, like, she's poor and her mom's dead. And it's like, oh, no, she's rich and her mom's dead.
Yeah, that's...
Why are they making fun of her? Rich is, like, cruise control for cool when you're a shitty kid in the, like, late 80s, early 90s.
Cosplaying as Blossom.
Yeah, no kidding.
And that fucking hat.
Boy. She even gets a rose hat later in the... In the movie,
she does. They deck her out like exactly like what's her face in Blossom. It's
but
to the
apparently like this predates Blossom,
just barely though. Like it's
by a nose,
very close. But so the department store has this like wishing well that you can just go up and grab a free gift out of, because that's how wishing wells work. And the girl who we have yet to actually say her name, which I forget, it's Jessica. And the one friend that she actually has, they go up, they grab gifts out of the wishing well, and her gift is, she opens this tiny little box, and it says she gets one free wish from
Philomena.
Philomena, played by Clark Griswold's mother-in-law.
Played by Doris Grau. Is that what Doris Grau sounds like?
Hey!
Nah.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Marie Verone.
I tried really hard not to go there.
You knew I was going to go there. I gave you fair warning on Discord that I was going to break out of bad Ray Romano the moment I saw that she was in this movie.
Here's what was really disappointing about this. So when the mannequin gets thrown in the trash, she comes out and rescues it. And then like she's dusting it off. And then it totally does that, like, little, like, whimsy thing of, like, oh, she's still dusting it while she lets go of the duster, and it's just floating in the air, still dusting. And at that point, I was just like, oh, this is a fucking magic movie. Oh. I mean, not that I was expecting to have, like, a hard science logical explanation for why a fucking mannequin comes to life, but just, like, a wizard did it just was kind of a letdown.
I mean,
let's...
Were you expecting anything different from an early 90s movie ostensibly geared toward children or
I don't know, maybe some families. Christmas magic instead of just, like, magic?
Well, so what? Then the mannequin comes to life at Christmas and not 2 weeks before Christmas?
I mean, we've said nothing if not that who the fuck cares when the calendar says Christmas is.
Oh, I know, but, like, if those are going to be the rules, we have to establish this early.
Make goddamn what Mickey from Seinfeld show up and make her come to life or something. I don't know.
Okay, yeah, let's have Eli show up. I don't care. We'll make this a Buddies adjacent movie. I will force that down your throats. Don't even threaten me. So, Clark Griswold's mother-in-law grants her one free wish. And also gives her a necklace with Brad's favorite thing in the world on it.
Yay!
Tell us about that.
You can say it. No, I mean, there's a magic crystal. because why not? It seems... the movie isn't very clear on the purpose of the magic crystal. Is the magic crystal what is sustaining,
you know,
Amy, or like it's never really brought up aside from just being this extra little MacGuffin. It shines a couple of times. Later in the movie, when Jess is having her crisis of faith moment in the second act, she throws it away, but it's not really clear that that has any material effect on Amy. But yes, there is a J.O. crystal in this movie.
Yeah, I don't think it was intended to be like the MacGuffin, the source of magic, whatever. It was just a thing to put in the box because, like, if a kid opened a box and it had a little slip that said one free wish, that kid would have just thrown it away.
You know? Yes, I suppose so.
You know, like, everybody's going to get a little something. So, yeah, why not a little quartz necklace? And then, hey, let's pretend it does something, even though it doesn't.
So, I mean, it does. It glows.
Yeah, but
you're jacking it with other bros that also have crystals. Everybody knows this.
Yeah, but this is a Disney film, so we can't actually say what it does and what it's for. Because that would be...
So you're saying Doris was just like, here, just give this to your single dad. He'll know what it's for.
Yeah, basically. Of course she wishes for a mom for Christmas. She specifically wants the mannequin in the store that looks like Olivia Newton-John. And like they talk about the rules. It's like, all right, she's going to show up. She's going to do this. You got until Christmas Eve to enjoy it. All right, break. Go team. And she just shows up like nothing's wrong at the house later that night when business dad is kind of not paying attention to his daughter. And the daughter kind of doesn't think anything's going to happen until Olivia Newton-John shows up to answer an ad that the dad hadn't even put in the newspaper yet for like a live-in nanny for the daughter. And then it's like the next 20 to 30 minutes is Jessica teaching the mannequin how to be a person.
I think the mannequin comes in and is basically just like, yes, hello, I am here for your human job. I mean, job. I came from the Alpha Centauri bus station, basically.
It's. Yeah.
Oh, boy. And as soon
and again, as... it gets dropped off for about 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah. But then she I'll say this for Olivia Newton-John. She does a wonderful job of playing up the whole, yes, I was literally born yesterday. Why do you ask? Kind of routine. And yeah. She doesn't make it annoying or ridiculous. She's just like, yeah, I don't know what the fuck any of this stuff is. I don't know what you're talking about. She literally learns about the world through like books and fashion catalogs.
Yeah. She gets like a cookbook and like a copy, like Better Homes and Gardens. Like, yeah, I can make this work.
But there's this weird implication that all of the other mannequins are also alive, and I guess they come alive in a weird Today's Special sort of way when nobody's around, because she knows all the other mannequins. And
the way she explains it is each of the mannequins is allowed basically like 2 hours of yard time a night.
Yeah, yeah. Literally, that's exactly it, yes.
And so I have to wonder, what exactly is going on here with Lunch Lady Doris? So like are the mannequins like did she bring them to life as some sort of sick cruel joke? Is she a warden at this mannequin prison?
I love where this is going.
Going on?
But also remember, she when we first meet her in the film, she's actively rescuing these mannequins. Like the Santa mannequin is getting thrown away.
She wanted. He was trying to end his own sentence, and she pulled him back because he knew he was taking the easy way out. Oh, he needs to suffer.
She pulled him out of the trash compactor and threw him in the hole. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, I mean,
Diane's not good enough for you.
He was in like a back room until they rescue him later in the film.
That's true. Oh, don't worry. He gets his eventually. I mean, he gets executed, but good.
So I guess if you want to take the most charitable reading of it, what happens is these mannequins come to life no matter what.
Right.
And Doris is there to help manage it and stop it from turning into, oh, hey, the mannequin came to life. Let's put it in a wood chipper.
Right. And the kid's wish is basically like a 2-week stay of execution, essentially.
Because all the mannequins are getting replaced with the stone-faced vaporwave type mannequins.
They're all getting replaced with Jacob Marley. Why the fuck are they all wrapped in chains? So is that to keep them from coming to life?
No, they're wrapped.
No. Are they like they're turning the department store into like a mannequin Supermax?
They're all wrapped up in chains because Amy has already escaped, and they don't want any other inmates to escape the prison. They put them in chains after the Amy mannequin quote unquote sprouted legs and walked away.
We didn't even talk about the B-plot with the detective, which is also very dumb.
Well, the detective is on the case of who stole the mannequin. And his only lead is this small child who seems to be everywhere that the clues for the mannequin show up. And at every turn, he is thwarted in his investigation by the mannequins.
By the mannequin or by someone else just being like, oh my god, who the fuck cares?
Yeah.
It's $130 worth of merchandise. The money showed back up in the till, and it's a single mannequin we're going to throw away in 3 weeks.
I think that's what we call a problem that solved itself.
Who cares, Larry?
Time to go back and drink more coffee and get paid to fucking do it.
Didn't he even say at one point that, like, the things that were stolen were, you know, a fancy pair of boots and a nice dress, and also like $35 worth of costume jewelry. Like, it's not even real jewelry. It's costume jewelry that you could just go buy at Goodwill anyway.
It's
kid movie logic. It's kid movie logic, and we can't worry about it.
And yet, here we are dedicating an entire movie to worry, or an entire hour to worrying about it.
So I want to point out a few of my favorite lines in the movie so far to this point. Jessica comes home to meet her dad, and he asks her if she knows any good stories, and her response is, "Do you know any clean jokes?" And I don't know.
The dad kind of chuckles knowingly and doesn't tell any jokes.
Yep, because no, he doesn't. No jokes that a 12-year-old girl should be hearing. And then when Amy shows up at the house, the first thing she says is, "Hey, this is a nice house. There's no music playing." She's a mannequin. The next part of this plot is that Jessica wants to decorate the house for Christmas. She wants to go get a Christmas tree, but she can't drive. Amy doesn't have a driver's license. What's a girl to do? Anybody?
They're gonna steal a car from the department store that fortunately has a working car inside of it.
Oh, I was gonna say chop down a tree in front of Todd and Margo's house.
I mean, that would be the sensible thing to do.
Yeah, for real. And that would be the easy option. But no, yeah, they break into the store after hours. And
actually, I do like... Sorry, since we're talking about our favorite lines, it just reminded me of my favorite, because it's in this part of the exchange when they're talking about what to do and possibly get a cab. And Olivia Newton-John goes, "I only have 89 cents. I don't know why I liked that line so much, but I do.
Which implies to me that at some point somebody just stuck 89 cents in one of her coat pockets.
That's what I was hoping. But now, unfortunately, they go on to explain that she's paying back the money for all of the clothes that she took with her, which is lame. And I just wish that it was inexplicably that just this mannequin only has 89 cents.
It's lame because with all likelihood, this movie was written by a cop.
Yeah, it would have been much better if that was like the change that she had found while she was alive in the department store and squirreled it away behind like an outlet cover somewhere in her little secret mannequin cache.
And she joined the Sticky Bandits, but she's still like on day one of the training.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyways, that's my fun little headcanon.
Anyway,
let's
I like
get
that.
Back to it.
I like that. So anyway, Amy takes her to the store so that the mannequin in the cab driver mannequin in the car, his name is Wilkins, can drive them to the tree lot. And Wilkins is obsessed with how great his car is. He loves the car.
Well, it's good since he spends most of his time inside of it.
He knows everything about it. It's got all original. It's got an all original engine. It's got all original seating. All original gasoline, apparently, because it runs out of gas very quickly.
Why'd they put a car in the middle of the department store? It doesn't make any sense. I don't get it. No stars. they drive it out. There's a madcap scene where they're driving through the mall, knocking over boxes. Unfortunately, they don't take out any of the stone mannequins. Would have been a good touch. A little bit of revenge there. They somehow drive it to the loading dock and out of the loading dock.
I do love that whenever they come on the loading dock, the one mannequin, like, was it Ted or Tommy or whatever?
Just is there.
He's just smoking.
They run out of gas. They go and charm a gas station attendee into giving them gas. And then they are on their merry way. And I honestly, you gotta pick up the slack here, because I think I dozed off for a second after this.
Honestly, yeah. Like at this point, it just becomes a ticking clock to get Wilkins back into the store before he turns back into a mannequin, because his two hours are almost up.
Yeah,
they decorate the tree, but of course they decorate it with candles, and it lights the tree on fire.
Yes.
And
okay,
that burns down most of the family photos
that they had inexplicably put under the tree with the lit candles.
Yeah, because Amy saw this in a catalog and she wanted to recreate it. And when they initially show the dad the tree, he does not seem like he gives a shit. And I think it's because instead of hiring an actor to play this character, they hired, I mean, I think this is, you know, great, you know, cast for the role that you got there. They hired a mannequin of Alan Thicke to play this character.
it's because he's a businessman in the 90s. He's probably about three whiskey sours deep. You have to split them up into two cups so they fit into the cup holders. And he comes home, cannot be bothered by these lit candles on a tree in his home.
And so as they toast with homemade eggnog, which I cannot imagine a child made correctly, they toast, and then of course the tree burns down along with all the family photos and most of the living room, and all Amy can think to do is pour eggnog on it.
That's a cute little moment.
It's a cute little moment. I enjoyed that. But this is the brief portion of the film where the dad and Jessica are very angry at Amy. And they don't understand why she doesn't understand people things. And, like, well, of course Amy doesn't understand people things. She's not a people. Yet.
Not a people person. Yet. spoiler alert. Sorry. Oh, no. I bet you weren't going to guess how the end of this movie goes.
My dad tries to fuck the mannequin.
Well, we'll get to that. But.
Yeah, I mean, have you seen Silent Hill 2?
No. Should I have?
There's a scene, a cutscene where Pyramid Head is like fucking a mannequin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yes, there is.
You know what's bad? I didn't know if you meant Silent Hill 2 the game or Silent Hill Revelations the movie.
I realized that this would be some confusion of for you. Anyway.
Brad, are you okay there, buddy?
I'm telling you. I'm back with a vengeance, baby.
Oh, my
11
God.
Per. It's going to be okay. You're going to be all right.
You're going to be fine. So Jessica has a school play coming up that she has to get ready for. Like, she has to come up with a speech or, like, a poem that she has to recite in front of the class. And they need a Santa Claus to stand behind her as she gives this speech. And, of course, the school Santa Claus is out sick or something like that. Amy has a great
idea. The school
idea.
Santa Claus. You know, the school Santa Claus that every school keeps on.
They keep him on retainer, yeah.
No, they were giving a Santa Claus mannequin delivered, apparently, from the garbage, and it got delayed or whatever.
Oh, right, because guess what? It never made it to the garbage.
Yeah,
that's,
I guess so.
That's right. So, of course, Amy knows right away where she can get a Santa Claus mannequin and has Warden Doris Roberts release him for one night. And we enter this amazing sequence where they have to break into the department store because now the detectives are on their trail and they're trying to set up a trap to catch whoever is stealing mannequins.
A night trap, if you
don't
will.
Don't these detectives have, like, families or...
No.
Lives?
No.
Listen, these guys work...
They're power-tripping egomaniacs. They're mall detectives from the 90s. Everybody knows this.
Look, these guys work on commission. They only get paid when they arrest somebody. That was supposed to be a joke, but as I said it, I realized it sounded way too plausible, and now I'm second-guessing my entire life. I'm sorry, everybody, if I just put that evil out into the world. But so they break into the department store to rescue this mall Santa, or this, I keep calling him a mall Santa.
I'm glad malls don't exist anymore, because that means mall cops don't exist anymore.
He is technically a mall Santa, if you think about it in a certain way. He's a Santa at a mall. He's mall Santa.
This is true.
I mean, he was more hit by a car than mauled, but...
We're not there yet, guys. But yeah, they break him out of the department store with the help of all the other mannequins, which is like a fun little bit of like almost horror as they're being chased out of the store and the mannequins are tripping the cops up at every turn. And inexplicably, they don't just like go straight home or go where I thought they were going to the play. They go and they look at Christmas decorations with the Santa Claus.
Why not?
Why not? Because I think they realized at this point there wasn't enough Christmas in the movie yet. Because, like, they established, like, oh, this is a mom for Christmas, but, like, where's the trees? Where's the lights? We already burnt down the one tree we had. We need to do something.
We got a mom. Now we need the for Christmas.
Yeah. So they take the Santa Claus to look at Christmas decorations, and inexplicably and without warning, the Santa Claus gets hit by a car and busts into a million pieces. I'm sorry. And then
it's Greek tragedy style. It's done off screen, but then we see the aftermath.
Yes, and it is genuinely shocking. And then the worst thing in the movie happens.
Oh, God, this.
Because Amy uses her mannequin powers to bring all of the other Christmas displays to life. And not just like the display mannequin carolers that are hanging around, but also the display mannequin elves that someone has apparently put on their front lawn. And now we have a bunch of little people dressed as elves, dressed as plastic elves running around in this movie to rescue a plastic Santa Claus. And through the power of mannequin magic, he reconfigures himself like the Wolfman from the Monster Squad. And I want to drink myself into an early grave, because what is this all of a sudden? What have I gotten this into?
It's truly horrifying, and they form a prayer circle around the Santa. Ugh. And then they reconstitute him through the power of Christmas magic, I guess?
Yeah,
maybe. I was gonna say, like, a boon from Pazuzu or something. This is some devil bullshit.
I was about to say, like, you know, we have...
Prayer circle? I say summoning circle.
We have the dead parent alert, but should we also have the dead Santa alert? Because this seems to happen a lot. Oh, God. Jonathan, what have you gotten us into here?
Yes, by the way, we should mention this was Jonathan's choice.
Yes.
I just wanted to watch Mannequin, and this did not... Like, there's not even anything close to Hollywood Montrose to me. Chip does not fucking count. Chip does not drive a cool-ass car.
You teased... You had something dumb to tell us.
Yeah, about... so here's the deal. So, Mannequin is a movie... Who was in it? Andrew McCarthy? I don't give a shit about him. He directed Orange is the New Black, some episodes of what the fuck's up with that? Who let him have a career past, like, 1991? So, who was in Mannequin?
Kim Cattrall. And,
Estelle Getty was in it. Speaking of stopping my mom will shoot. And James Spader. So, here's the thing. They, you know How I Met Your Mother, right?
I don't think you've ever met my mother.
I don't think you've met my mom either.
So they are, for some horrible fucking reason, currently, I think they're still doing it. It says January to present.
Come on, play with us.
How I Met Your Father. I am Hong Kong. This is a fucking freight train getting my fucking point here. Anyway, she's playing Bob Saget on How I Met Your Father.
Well, that's a shame. I mean, Bob Saget's dead and all, but that's no reason to recast him.
And so Hilary Duff is the...
Did he really die?
Yeah, like first of the year.
Oh, that's right. Now I remember. Sorry, go ahead. Hilary Duff.
Anyway, Hilary Duff is Ted, I guess, and then Kim Cattrall is future Ted, I guess.
Okay.
Anyway, this is the second time they tried to do this fucking show.
Yeah, I know.
They tried to do it before, and it was even more dire in 2014.
Yeah,
because it was Greta Gerwig and Meg Ryan.
Yep, I remember that.
But here's the point I'm getting at here, it seems weird trying to put Greta Gerwig in anything that's made to be seen by more than three people, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I just associate her with Noah Baumbach shit that's not made to be watched.
You know, it's weird. The thing that I most remember her for is China, Illinois, which also nobody watched.
It's the best at math. I watched it. You and I. We watched it both.
Anyway, so here's what I'm getting at. There is someone in the cast list of this show credited as bar patron number 2 with the name listed as Johnny 5.
Oh no.
And if you go on to IMDb, it says he is actually credited as Johnny Martini now, so which I want to say, I'm glad we came to an understanding, Mr. Martini.
So we're going to start calling you Johnny Martini now?
No, I'm saying that guy knows what's good for him and started being a bad actor with a different name.
Well, because you already claimed Johnny 5 in your SAG-AFTRA. That's yours. So, of course he had to change his name.
Yeah, I mean, why do you have to change your name? He's the one who sucks, right?
Yes.
Exactly. He played a pig owner in Fuller House.
Ew. No.
That was a lovely little sidebar.
The name Johnny Martini is still getting to me, too, because I'm thinking about, the fake name Sean Anna used in Greece.
Yeah.
Like, Johnny Casino and the Gamblers. Just thinking of a band called, Johnny Martini and the Winos or something like that.
That sounds like the name of a band that would be in, Swingers or something. Like, a joke band in Swingers. I don't know. So Amy brings to life all of the yard ornaments, and they bring this busted-up Santa mannequin back to life. And also, I noticed when he came back to life, he came back with an actual Santa beard, and they
have the beard descend down onto him at the end of this summoning ritual. It just comes and falls on his face. It's remarkable.
When he was hit by the car, he was drunk hobo mannequin Santa, and when he wakes up from this incident, he is all of a sudden Gandalf the White. Santa Claus come back to
we have the technology
the
we can rebuild him.
And all he does is go stand behind Jessica while she recites a poem about how cool it is to be yourself or something, and then he goes back to the store,
and he still has a weird gross mannequin face when he's telling her line that she forgot. I don't like it.
Now, here's a question. So during that performance, was he running out of time, or did he just revert back to his mannequin form for the purposes of the show?
Interesting question.
And can mannequins do that?
I mean, if he was running out of time, he probably wouldn't be able to talk.
I got all the time in the world. I got a time machine.
Unless the J.O. crystal allows her to hear the mannequin's voices.
Maybe that's true. Maybe the crystal has more power than we expected.
But we did see later in the film that the mannequins can change into human form and back at will, because the driver does the exact same thing with the detective, where he bumps him with his car and then immediately turns back into a mannequin.
Right, and the other mannequins, they move their heads, they swing their arms around as mannequins whenever it sees fit.
So basically, Toy Story ripped this movie off.
They can go into skit. They can go into a squid form, and then they can go into kid form at will. Yes, Toy Story ripped this movie off. 4 years ahead of its time. 6 years. I don't remember when Toy Story came out.
Split the difference. You got it.
Oh, by the way, watched half of Lightyear recently. Man, Chud's really got upset about a peck on the cheek, huh? That was really, that kiss was absolutely nothing.
Oh, yeah.
it's ridiculous.
I even remember, like, one of our friends commented that, like, he was watching it on Disney Plus, and he said that, oh, they took that scene out, and then, like, 30 minutes later, he went back and said, oh, no, I just missed it. That's how small it was.
Blink and you'll miss it. It's ridiculous how big of a molehill they made out of that. That was, man, oh, manatee.
It's...
I only watched half of it, not because my wife fell asleep, so whatever.
But you have a child. You paid attention for as long enough for her to fall asleep, and then you fell asleep.
We actually watched it after she went to bed, because we were just so... We usually watch every Pixar, and we were desperate to watch something. And, hey, it's the new Pixar, so we started it, but it's all right.
It's okay. So
here's where I'm at with the Coke Dream World. I can't tell what fruit flavor it is, but it's definitely a fruit flavor.
Yeah, like, I had Nikki try it, and she said it was like, split the difference between, like, cherry and lemon, and it's somewhere in there.
Cherry and lemon.
That was her assessment.
Lychee? Let's go with sangria. It's Coke Sangria.
Coke Sangria.
I'm okay with this. So, Brad, you didn't see, like, the shocking twist in the third act of Lightyear, did you?
I guess I better finish Lightyear at some point.
Unless you...
Well, don't spoil it
for
me. Okay, is there really a shocking twist?
Kind of? I don't know
how... Yeah, he gets court-martialed for, like, massacring, like, 50 or 60 of those little fucking squeaky alien dudes.
Ooh. What a twist. Mm-hmm. No, I'll finish it. Don't spoil
it. Okay, I won't say anything then. But let's get back to the matter at hand.
He ordered a code red on Slinky Dog.
the government put out a burn notice on Sheriff Woody. Anyway.
Did I ever tell you guys?
Sid put out a burn notice on him with a magnifying glass.
We're going to ride this tangent into the station. Did I ever tell you guys I got a Sheriff Woody doll when I was little as a gift, and I was terrified that it would come to life, and I put it outside of my room every night out of an exercise of caution?
So that he could come to life and go terrorize others instead?
Yes. My parents are grown adults. They can deal with a little cowboy man. I'm a 6-year-old. I can't handle this.
I mean, Child's Play tells me, like, no, adults can't handle that.
I don't think Woody would be actively malicious to anybody, but I just didn't want it happening in my room.
But also, I think if
other Old West sheriffs were anything to go by, he's just an outlaw with a badge.
I suppose.
Like, the only person would be, like, the fucking Clantons and the Earps is that one of them has badges.
I think his creepy plastic face creeped me out more than anything.
But also, as a child who was, like, familiar with Toy Story, were you not concerned that your Sheriff Woody would be, like, depressed that you didn't want him to be in your room at night?
Look, that makes me really sad to think about now. I was like six. Come on, cut me a break here.
I got you, fam. I just want to get through this movie so we can go do something else.
All right, well, guess what? Let's go through the rest of this movie.
So basically, this movie is the MILF on the shelf.
Yeah. Please
make that the subtitle of this.
Because guess what happens after the school play shenanigans? Dad's Christmas present to Jessica and Amy is three tickets to Hawaii, and he begs his live-in nanny, who came from literally nowhere, to come along with them because Dad's got a thing for the nanny. And
am I falling in love with the nanny?
Why and how, especially after she did the terrible thing of destroying their entire life?
Sometimes you have to burn it all down and build back from the ashes.
Oh yeah, we didn't even talk about the fact that, like, Amy invites Jessica's childhood crush over to play, and he's just sitting there at home when she shows up, and she's too embarrassed to say a word to him, and also she's mad at Amy for reading her diary.
Yeah, and even the kid is like, his name's Chip Cheesem, I think.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, she invited me over. She said you had the hots for you, but you were too embarrassed to say something.
And that was literally it, yeah.
The kid doesn't quite say that, but it's very fucking close.
Mm-hmm, yeah. She said you had something to tell me. When she's talking about her diary, it occurred to me, what is a diary if not a device for parents to spy on their children? Like that's why they invented diaries, right? To convince children that was a safe space when actually it was not.
Pretty much. The thing that stuck with me is when the kid's leaving, the dad's like, "Sorry, it's so weird over here." And the kid's just like, "Hey, you just see my house." It just leaves.
But yeah, so like there's just this tiny little bit of manufactured drama where Jessica is mad at Amy for embarrassing her in front of her crush, and the dad is mad at Amy for accidentally burning all of the family photos.
Just imagine the kid's house, like the yarn nativity scene came to life, and they just won't shut the hell up.
The plastic baby Jesus won't stop crying. It's embarrassing.
The goat just ate everything, and the shepherd is just kind of like, yeah, they do that.
The three wise men are on the lawn playing volleyball with the baby Jesus.
No wonder he's crying. he's just getting schooled by these like guys who are way taller than him. They're just like bumps at Spike. Oh, it's 3-0 wise men. Baby Jesus, you're gonna have to pick up the pace.
Get good, baby Jesus. So
pretty much.
So the end of this movie, the conflict is that everybody knows Amy is going to turn back into a mannequin at midnight on Christmas Eve.
Dad doesn't know. He's still in the dark.
Dad doesn't know. Dad doesn't need to know. What do we do about this? How do we fix this problem? Gentlemen, ideas.
Go to Philomena. She says, hold on to her at midnight and maybe she'll stay human. Christmas magic? ?
She basically says, look, kid, I just work here.
Pretty much.
She literally just goes, maybe?
I mean, she absolutely makes the argument. She's like, hey, look, kid, I did what you wanted. It's better than nothing.
Usually your dad? Yeah, usually when the guys want to plow the mannequins, they don't really give a crap if she's alive or not.
You're asking for way too much out of this deal, kid.
Philomena was supposed to show up and I guess provide her magic to this whole situation. She gets stuck in a traffic jam. Amy decides to leave, I guess, and go back to the store because, like, she gets the call of the wild and starts walking back to the store, I guess.
Well, she just go to the North Crater for the reunion.
When nature calls, you have to go to the only bathroom you can trust, and I guess hers is at the department store.
10 A++ would poop here again.
She gets back into mannequin position, and the dad and Jessica show up and do their level best to be Christmassy and love the mannequin.
And the detective's there, but then Wilkins just runs him over with a car.
Yeah. Yep.
Like you do. And hooray, it works.
You'll never guess what. Yeah.
You'll never guess. It works.
She shows up. The mannequin is still there. So she is just materialized, devoid of her mannequin body. And I guess she's a real girl now.
I would have appreciated it if the mannequin that used to be her turned into one of the weird faceless ones.
That would have been very good. And then they play that eerie music over the top. Why not?
Oh, yeah.
That'd be so good.
Oh, yes. I love this. All right. So that's the end of the movie. Now I'm just going to jump straight into the crankometer because we have got to hash this one out.
You said eerie music, and I'm just imagining this movie with the Twin Peaks theme.
You know, it's weird. I was thinking Eerie, Indiana. But let's go to the crankometer, which is our X-Y-axis for rating Christmas movies. The X-axis is how Christmassy a film is, and the Y-axis is how good the film is. So, gentle friends, X-axis for A Mom for Christmas. How Christmassy?
Kinda.
This is based on a book. Was the book in any way Christmassy? Because I think the book's title was just like Magic Mom or
A Mom by Magic was the book's title. By Magic.
So was this just like a case of someone pitched this and someone was like, well, what's the point? It's at Christmas. Ah, there you go. Now we got it.
I mean, the book and the movie came out the same year, so I'm pretty sure that there was some kind of synergy going on. But yeah, A Mom by Magic is about a girl who wants a mom for Christmas. So, yeah.
There
you have it there.
I mean, it's hitting the points of, like, Christmas and family that we kind of like to fall back on. So, I mean, I'll give it the credit it's due for that.
It makes pretty good use of, like, Christmas decorations, especially in the scene where they burn them all down. But also just like, you know, it gets a lot of mileage out of those sparkly, twinkly lights, especially in those really weird sequences where it kind of accidentally becomes a horror film. I'm a fan of those.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of dipping a toe into quality, but there's times they're kind of weird and disjointed, but I chalked it up more being a TV movie that's just being edited for time at the sake of making a goddamn lick of sense. So I'm not going to begrudge it too much, because like, when I'm talking about the play, really just felt like, what the hell does this have to do with anything in the world?
Yeah, because her like little performance that she gives doesn't even have anything to do with Christmas. It's just like, be yourself, and that's cool, and good for you. And it doesn't...
Yeah, she's just like, Santa can't give you a good personality, so suck it the fuck up and get better.
Pretty much. So, I mean, that's a bit of a missed opportunity, I guess.
But I'll say, like, I'm happy with giving it, like, a 1 or a 2, because it does kind of hit on a central message that, like, you know, I don't know. So, someone who is...
Less Jonathan, answer the question.
No, I was gonna, yeah, someone who is less me could probably have something to say about just the whole feeling of just like, you know, oh no, you need a mom. This movie kind of just takes as just a baseline, like a prior, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Isn't that
but
I don't know.
Yeah, we're getting into Mars Needs Moms territory or that.
But I'll also feel like kind of letting that slide, because it's more just girls lonely, dad lonely. It's just like, all right, you know what? This family might need a stepmom. All right, let's go with that.
Sure. I'll give it a 1 for the J.O. Crystal.
I'm happy with a 1, yeah.
any Christmas movie that has a magic crystal involved.
Maybe that's why she invited the boy. She's like, oh, she's had a J.O. crystal and said you'd know what to do with it. You're a 12-year-old boy. Here you go. Go nuts.
Well, oh, dear.
Well, then no wonder the magic worked, because the crystal was way overpowered. So, yeah, like, are we saying an automatic 1 just for the inclusion of a J.O. crystal?
No. I agree with John. It's you know, it's Christmassy enough. It's got kind of that, it's maudlin, but it's not Christmas shoes maudlin, so it's fine. It's a 1, you know?
Yeah, and I'm okay with that. Like, I would, my argument would be to make it a 2, but I'm already outvoted, and also my argument would be very flimsy at best, just because I like the color of Christmas lights. So
it's very pretty.
It is very
Everybody
pretty.
Everybody likes Christmas lights.
So yes. I'm amenable to a 1. Now, quality-wise, let's hear it.
All right, so a lot of problems I would have with just the production quality are just, it's a 1990 made-for-TV movie.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying not to count that against it, but it's one of those things where it's like, well, they're already starting at a deficit. They're making a made-for-TV movie in 1990.
Judged on its merits, it's not bad for what it is as a 1990 TV movie, you know?
I feel like it's not a thing I would need to watch again. Not really out of it's bad or anything, because it's fine, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen way worse Disney original Disney Channel original movies. It's more just that, like, you can kind of get these things better in other places at this point.
Yeah. But I mean, taken for when it was created and for the market it was created for, it could be a heck of a lot worse. And I mean, we could be doing a talking dog movie right now.
Yeah.
This isn't bad. This isn't, like, I didn't hate it at all.
Yeah, it's, you know? Very, it's very, not by the numbers in a weird save the cat sense, but it's just like, there are bullies because there are bullies, and, you know, it's all this shit. Like, yeah. A lot of it feels like almost kind of like sitcom writing formulaic, basically.
Oh yeah, it's absolutely by the numbers, but it's comfortably so.
It's by the numbers, but it's very much pitched towards children, so I can kind of give that a pass.
Yeah,
it's like Homer Simpson talking about Grand Funk Railroad, like the capable drumming.
Capable drumming. There you go. It's fine. Like a 0 or a 1, maybe.
Like I'd
say a 0.
Yeah, I can't say any of this was actively bad. I'm going to go ahead and say I didn't mind my time with it. In fact, there were certain things that, like, certain creative choices that I thought were interesting and fun. I got some genuine laughs out of it. So I would,
like,
venture a 1 at least.
I might even go with a 1. Like, I liked, like, the weird horror movie vibes that it went with, like, the mannequins and stuff. Olivia Newton-John's really cute in it. Like, when she's playing up, like, the, whoops, I'm a mannequin, I'm going to pour eggnog on a fire.
Yeah, kind of, like, stuff. She goes, like, completely into it, and she sells it. And, like, we haven't even talked about the fact that, like, she sings, like, 2 or 3 songs in the movie, and both of them are pretty good. I mean, as far as like, made-for-TV movie Christmas songs go, they're all right. You know, I ain't got no problem with that. But, I'm more willing to give this a positive score.
I'm part of the 1 crew on this one, I think.
Yeah, I would have liked to cut out a lot of the shit with the other children, because it's just kind of, who cares? And put in, like, more, like mannequin hijinks.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm with you there, especially, like, unless you're going to use the kids and the bullying, like, aspect, then why are you doing it? Because, like...
Yeah, like, the mannequin doesn't even, like, kick the kid's ass or something. It's just the kids just, like, go home and leave the movie after the play.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's really no point other than to show off that Jessica is ostracized for not having a mom, I guess, which is weird and mean-spirited, but also, like, not entirely the point of the movie.
Yeah.
So,
you just have a kid who's going to go on to lose, like, 9 roles in a row to Danny Cooksey. And
oh. Okay. Well, just for simplicity's sake, I'll be good and say this is a positive 1. How does that sound?
I'm fine with that. I was pleasantly surprised, I guess I should say, in some regards.
Me as well. I did definitely enjoy my time with it, and that was something I could not have guessed going into this.
Right.
So there you have it, folks. So put this on your crankometer, positive 1 for A Mom for Christmas. And we will keep this holiday gravy train rolling, because it's... You know, the end of August, we're jumping into September, the Burr months, as some people like to call it. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm getting pretty hyped up for Home for the Horror Days. I don't know what we're going to do yet, but it's going to be good.
I'm excited. I feel like I've ducked out on so many Home for the Horror Days recently in recent years. I'm in it to win it this year. Let's do it.
Hell yeah. We're going to watch a movie where it's like, what if Santa, but like, he's evil.
But like, he kills people.
Yeah, man, that'd be fucked up, man.
Tune in for the next 2 months of Christmas Creeps, where we review the film Fat Man 4 times in a row. No,
I was just gonna watch Santa's Sleigh 4 times in a row.
As I recall, we didn't hate that one the way I think people expected us to.
Let's just watch some, like, old WCW tapes. Fuck it.
Yeah,
same thing.
Come on back. September will be interesting. We may not be doing Home for the Horror Days early, but you never know. And that's
Brad. You know, there could be more fucking talking dog movies getting released this year. I don't know.
Well, hey, while we're talking about that, let me bring this up real quick. The HBO Max, like, Christmas slate.
Oh,
oh no.
We talked about We talked about this in our Discord recently, which, hey, if you want to join our Discord and come and chat about Christmas movies, video games, nerd stuff, all kinds of weird stuff, please do. We have a fun time in our Discord channel. You'll find the link to that in our show notes. So, yeah, come and join us. But the
you can come in and slander Elon Musk, but since he's a public figure, it doesn't count as slander. It's just critique.
This is true. And I'm trying to find. Okay, so there's four films coming out this holiday season on HBO Max. One of them is, in fact, a direct sequel to A Christmas Story starring Peter Billingsley as Ralphie. And I want to die.
Because the last direct sequel that they tried was so good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we tried to piggyback on the Christmas Story vibes last year. Why not just literally piggyback on A Christmas Story this year?
God, 8-bit Christmas. What a shame.
The best of times and the worst of times.
What a fucking waste.
Can you go ahead and like find like a sound clip of Stimpy from Ren and Stimpy like coughing up a hairball, that warf noise? Just like do that, like I like, say like excuse me while I barf, and then you play that noise.
Yeah, okay.
That'd be cool.
Okay. Hang on. Let's cue this up.
No, leave this shit in. Leave this.
Oh, okay.
Completing our transformation into the Zoo Crew of Christmas movie podcasts.
I mean,
hey, it's Johnny Five and the Boys here.
God help you the day I fucking buy a soundboard. That's all I gotta say.
Holiday Harmony is here. It's a songwriter who lands an opportunity to compete for a once in a lifetime shot at the big time and heads cross country, only getting as far as Harmony Springs, Oklahoma, where her ride, her budget, and her hopes are stalled. And hoo boy, that's a Hallmark movie and a half right there. Not doing that.
Let me give you two words, lady. Southwest Airlines.
Spirit Air. A Christmas mystery. Let's see. 100 years ago, a strip of Santa's magical jingle bells were discovered by a young boy in Pleasant Bay, Oregon, bringing about a century of prosperity and peace for the small town. Now, days before Christmas, the bells are missing, and it's up to a group of kids to solve the case. Find the bells and restore Christmas magic.
So isn't this just the Goonies, but Christmas edition?
Yep.
I was thinking the Christmas mystery was who stole the cookies in the cookie jar. It turns out Santa stole the cookies in the cookie jar.
Yeah.
So I think we're definitely going to have to do at least the Christmas Story sequel, because it's absolutely going to be not good.
Oh, no.
Right?
Absolutely. I mean, like, Peter Billingsley is back as Ralphie. Scott Schwartz is back as Schwartz. Zach Ward is back, presumably, as Scott Farkas. It's going to be a time. So what we're saying is that the holiday season is approaching, and we have an embarrassment of riches ahead of us. And I have to say that with a straight face, and now my entire body is revolting.
Sam Parks as Tom. Is this like a Phantasm sequel?
Sure, why not?
Crossover sequel? Ralphie versus Reggie?
Who knows, man. Hey, anyway, if you want to get at us on the internet, you can tweet at us at Christmas Creeps. You can email us at xmascreeps@gmail.com. Go to facebook.com/Christmas Creeps. We are there as well. YouTube, Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, Google, all the places you get podcasts, that's where we are. Leave us a star rating and a review. Let people know this is a good show.
Not that I have high hopes for a Christmas Story sequel, but just the plot description just makes me, like, ugh.
Okay. What's the plot description?
Follows Ralphie, now adult, who returns to the house on Cleveland Street to give his kids a magical Christmas like the one he had as a child, reconnecting with childhood friends, and reconciling the passing of his old man.
The leg lamp is absolutely going to be dug up at some point, right?
Yeah.
That's going to be a plot point for sure.
Unless the old man is buried with the leg lamp.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Bury
me with my leg lamp. I'm calling it. I'm going to... Here, friggin' talks me on this. I will donate $50 to a charity of your choosing if we watch this movie and the leg lamp is not unburied.
Signed and sealed. That is a
signed and sealed
Christmas Creeps promise.
I stand by that. I totally believe I will keep that money in my pocket.
Okay, so am I to believe here from the names that Ralph married a woman named Sandy?
Oh, so Drusilla was not long for this world, huh?
And he has a brother. His brother's name, why? Also,
his brother's name's Randy, right?
Yeah, Randy, but you marry someone named Sandy. This is like Anthony Birch marrying a woman named Ashley. There is a lot of psychology going on there.
I mean, at least his name wasn't Andy.
Oh, man. Yeah, that would be closer.
So, wait, okay, here's another question to ask, because I think we've asked this before about a hypothetical Christmas Story sequel. Now that it's here, is this actually going to take place in the 60s? Or is this going to be inexplicably present day?
I mean, it couldn't possibly be present day, because Christmas Story is supposed to take place in the 1930s, right?
Very early 40s, I'm pretty sure. Late 30s, okay. Early 40s. Like,
all right.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, that's what I'm saying. Is this? It shouldn't take place present day.
But it's going to pretend that somehow there's a time skip. I mean, it could, but this probably will take place in what, the 70s or 80s. So let's see. Ralphie is less than 10 years old in the early 40s. So if he's in the 80s, that would put him in his 40s, and his kids. It could ostensibly take place in the 70s or 80s. And part of me believes they're going to put it in the 80s just to bank on like 80s nostalgia.
Oh, 1,000,000%, yes.
Right? That has to be the move.
What I remember about the framing story from the Gene Shepherd book is that the one part I remember is Ralph is a Vietnam veteran, so he's at least in the age range for that.
Yeah.
So, I would expect, depending, like, who's this kid here? I'm guessing River Drosh playing Mark Drosh, Duke the Drumster Drozzy. Let's see.
But yeah, he is. They're going to play fast and loose with the ages, like the dates, but I'm sure if they are going to land on a time period,
they're filming this in Hungary, so they might be trying for like a period piece then, because that's usually what you do when you're filming a movie. You just go to Eastern Europe and just like, it's 30 years ago.
But yeah, any final parting thoughts before we leave tonight, guys?
I think I'm well and exhausted. Thank you so much for listening. We know you have a lot of choice when it comes to everything. So thank you. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
From the bottom of our inky black hearts. Yes. Thank you so much for listening. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.